Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Marzi Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Afghanistan held its presidential election, and it may take weeks for the final results to be tallied. Certain polling stations could not be opened because of the danger from the Taliban, who had promised to disrupt the whole election. More than 50% of eligible voters participated. However, many are asking, why does the Taliban have so much power to disrupt everyday life in Afghanistan when the U.S. has had troops there since 2001 with the goal of wiping out the Taliban and bringing security to Afghanistan? We'll take a look at the various aspects to current life in Afghanistan on this, the debate.
Nearly 60% of an electorate of 12 million are estimated to have taken part in Saturday's vote despite threats from Taliban militants. Eight candidates are seeking to succeed outgoing President Hamid Karzai. The race has three frontrunners, former Foreign Ministers Abdullah Abdullah and Zalmay Rasul, and former Finance Minister Ashraf Ghani Ahmadzai. A runoff between the top two contestants may be needed to decide the winner. Whoever wins the race will have to make sensitive decisions, the most important one being the issue of a planned security pact with the United States. President Karzai withstood intense pressure from Washington to sign the deal and said his successor will have to deal with it. The issue has turned into a serious bone of contention between America and Afghanistan over the past 2 months. The pact will allow U.S. troops to stay in Afghanistan beyond 2014 and grant legal immunity to military personnel that would remain in the country. But Karzai insisted that Washington has to first guarantee that Afghan civilians will no longer be hurt in U.S. drone attacks and night raids. Karzai also wanted the U.S. to start peace talks with the Taliban. But Washington was not willing to accept those demands, and the dispute dragged on. But there are other serious problems facing the next Afghan leader. He will be leading a country gripped by extreme poverty. Afghanistan's infrastructure is in rubble. Over a decade of costly U.S.-led war has failed to end widespread militancy. The U.S. and its allies say the invasion of Afghanistan was aimed at ending militancy there. But the ongoing violence shows either the U.S. and its allies have failed in their war or they did not basically aim to establish peace in Afghanistan at all. The failing security situation in Afghanistan has even allowed the militants to leave for Syria to join the insurgents fighting the Syrian government. Afghans are now waiting for the results from Saturday's vote, expected by mid-May. If no single candidate gets 50% of the vote, there will be a runoff. The world will be watching the next Afghan president to see how he will deal with all the challenges.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Washington, foreign policy and national security analyst, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb, and out of Chicago from the Stop the NATO International Network, Mr. Rick Rozoff. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Washington with Mr. Korb. Given the situation that Afghanistan has, is it a success simply that they can even hold a presidential election there? Okay, well, it seemed like we having some problems with Washington. Let me cross over to Chicago. Mr. Rozoff, I pose the same question to you. Is it simply a success because they can hold a presidential election there?
I think a realistic interpretation. I don't know if we're both speaking at the same time. It's definitely an historic watershed in that, of course, this marks the smooth transition from the administration of Hamid Karzai, who's been head of state of Afghanistan in the entire post-Taliban, post-invasion period, to either Dr. Abdullah or Dr. Ghani. So, I mean, it's important, I suppose, in its own right. But as, some of the lead into this story indicated, we're still talking about a nation that has undergone 35 years of armed conflict that is in tatters and that really needs international assistance of a civilian and an economic rather than a military nature.
Well, Mr. Rozoff, I'm going to stay with you. We've seen an increase in attacks leading up to the election and some attacks since the election. Now, does this mean that the Taliban can basically attack whenever they want after more than 13 years of American occupation?
Unfortunately, I suspect that is the case, that at least in many parts, perhaps most provinces in the country, Taliban remains a formidable military force, and that what will soon be 13 full years of U.S. and NATO military occupation of the country has not politically or otherwise neutralized the Taliban opposition. You know, in fact, all we've seen, to be perfectly candid about it, over the past 13 years is a 40-fold increase in opium cultivation, and the explosion of a heroin epidemic in and around Afghanistan, which has affected the lives of millions of people in India, Pakistan, Iran, Russia, and elsewhere. This is all, I'm afraid, the West has to boast of in terms of an accomplishment in Afghanistan.
Stay with me, please. Let me cross over back to Washington. I believe that we have Mr. Korb with us now. Mr. Korb, hopefully you had heard, you could hear our discussion. I want to know, in your perspective, why does it appear that basically the Taliban can still strike at will wherever they want in Afghanistan?
Well, I think if you look at the last election in 2009 and take a look, there's been tremendous progress made. The last election was like 4.7 million people. This time there were over 7 million people. Even in the Pashtun areas, turnout was comparatively high compared to where it was in 2009. There's no doubt about the fact that the Taliban, because they were given aid and comfort and in Pakistan, were able to come back. But I think since President Obama has come in and he and NATO have added more troops, the situation is getting better. These elections were not policed by the United States and the NATO countries. It was the Afghan security forces that did it. Almost 60% of, as you in your lead up, you pointed out, did vote. And at some point, it's going to be up to the Afghans to take care of their own security. You talked about the fact that President Karzai wants to leave it to his successor to decide, and I think that's the right thing to do. We will not stay as in Iraq if they don't want us to stay, but if they ask us and the international community to stay, to assist in the training, and also to provide economic assistance, which we pledged in Tokyo to do, then I think we will do it. But in the final analysis, it's going to be their decision.
Of course, Afghanistan as opposed to Iraq. Sir, also, let me just stay with you, Mr. Korb. We have seen, though, you talked about the success as far as the percentage of people who have turned out to vote. What about the sensitivity? We have seen so many critical bombings in very sensitive areas, even areas where usually VIPs or a lot of foreigners actually gather. Does that say anything about the overall lack of security that Afghanistan still experiences?
Well, it's not perfectly secure. I don't think anybody would argue that. And I think the Taliban in the lead up to the election did step up their attacks, hoping to discourage people. But it didn't work because, as I say, you had almost twice as many people as turned out in 2009. And yesterday there were long lines at the polls, and violence was comparatively small. Wasn't perfect, but it was comparatively small. I think they played their best card, and it didn't work. So now we have to move on, and at some point there's going to be negotiations with the Taliban, who are willing to accept the Afghan constitution and elections and to protect the rights of women.
What about that, Mr. Rozov? Is that a sign of improvement? In your perspective, what has the United States accomplished there in almost 13 years of being present in Afghanistan?
I mentioned before, the only thing they effectively have done is officiate over an explosion of opium cultivation, but also over the deaths of tens of thousands of Afghans, including thousands of civilians, and the displacement of not only hundreds of thousands, but, perhaps millions of Afghans, both internally displaced and those who have fled across the borders into Iran and Pakistan. So it's been, the latest chapter in a catastrophe that truly, not to be too abstract about this, goes back to 1839, when for the first time Britain intervened in what subsequently became known as the Great Game in Central and South Asia to offset the influence of other powers in that part of the world. And this has gone on, at various interims, up to the present day. where there were three wars that Britain was involved in, you know, armed incursions into Afghanistan. You had the U.S. supporting the Mujahideen in out of Pakistan, incidentally, as, you know, Mr. Korb alludes to, the fact that Taliban was harbored in Pakistan. Apparently, it was quite all right if other armed insurgents were also harbored for attacks inside Afghanistan with U.S. assistance in the late 1970s through the early 1990s. This is the background against which we have to see the catastrophe that Afghanistan has become. It is the, you know, maybe the greatest and the last victim of the Cold War. And
all
we
right.
cannot just, you know, arbitrarily begin. Yeah.
Yeah, if you could just stay with me. I want to cross over and get some of our Facebook viewers' comments in this conversation. Stay with us, both of our guests, please.
In fact, the next president will have to destroy the Taliban with anything possible.